You are listening to the Myth TV Cast. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Myth TV Cast. My name's Pat DeVille. With me is my co-host, Dan Fry.
How you doing, Pat?
I'm good. It's been too long. Another show.
Yep.
Lots of good things going on.
We've slacked off again yet a couple more weeks, haven't we?
Yeah, well, you know, life is busy. I'm busy with work. I got a family.
Oh, I hear you.
Lots of things going on.
Yep. We each have two small kids. So.
Yeah, and work has been insane. So, you know, we deal with it the best we can, and we get to the show whenever we can.
Yep.
It's not for lack of interest or effort. You know, we love doing the show. But on top of things, joining us tonight, we got a great guest. We got Robert McNamara, one of the Myth TV devs. Robert, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me back, you guys. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone.
Happy Thanksgiving to you.
Yes, happy Thanksgiving.
I guess the big news since we talked to you last is...
We had some big news.
024 is out. Why don't you give us the rundown, Robert? What's new and exciting in this release?
Yeah, absolutely. We were in the midst of this development process when we last spoke a couple of months ago, I guess. So everything that we kind of talked through, I think we pretty much delivered on for this release. The big stuff is Mark Kendall's work on the on-screen display rewrite, and really that's putting it a little. You know, that's sort of underselling it. We call it the on-screen display, the OSD rewrite. But in reality, he's basically completely rewritten the video output code in Myth TV. And as a byproduct of that, you know, we now have a Myth UI OSD. Completely themeable, a lot more flexible than it used to be. My personal theme I've updated to suit with a new Myth UI OSD. That's ArcLight. Other big things in the release, Johnny Vavenard has collaborated with another guy and worked on a complete rewrite of our audio output system. So basically, you have rewrites of both our video and audio output code with some pretty impressive improvements. Specifically, his work goes into rendering high-definition audio, you know, 24 and 32-bit audio playback at full fidelity, support for up to 7.1 channel audio, simplified settings, basically instead of having to sort of come up with these arcane incantations of ALSA and Pulse Audio settings, you can go into the audio settings now, hit a scan for devices, it'll present you with a list of all of the valid devices on your system, and you can just select from a bunch of working devices, so that simplifies audio setup, which has kind of been a problem for some people in the past. So that'll help a lot of new users. Some of my own work for this release, I did a lot of the Blu-ray code. So we've got support for unencrypted Blu-ray discs and Blu-ray folder structures in Myth Video. We also have, if you have libAACS installed, we can do decryption of discs, and I think that's maybe one thing that has changed since we spoke a few months ago. I had just gotten that code committed when we last spoke, and it was purely unencrypted discs, but now with libAACS, which is hosted at the VideoLAN project, you can download that, configure a key file, and you can play any AACS encrypted disc that you have a processing key for. And the public ones are basically up through mid-2009. So you can play a lot of the first and second and third generation Blu-ray discs straight off the discs with Myth TV right now.
That's awesome.
I'm sure that I'm
that is great.
Leaving at least a couple of things out. We got another big overhaul to the Python bindings. And if you don't mind, I'm just going to pull up the release notes right now.
Go for
it. I should mention that for anybody who has looked at our 2.4 release notes, they are a massive step up from any release notes we've had before. They're just so much more complete, and we had actually a user maintain those for us this entire development cycle, Matt Sainer, and he's just done a kick-ass job with the release notes.
I see. I see. There's links in there to all the trouble tickets and everything. That's great. Makes it really easy to go into the details.
Yeah, it's really fantastic. I'm just gonna hit a couple of the other new features here. Embedded text subtitle support. That's something that a lot of people have complained about in the past. You know, in their MKV files, not having access to the raw text subtitles. We've got support for that now. I worked on this one, Blu-ray and DVD multi-angle. So for any of you with a extensive Blu-ray or DVD pornography collection, you can watch all the angles now. Chris Pinkham wrote us up a online theme browser and downloader. This is pretty awesome, too. You can now go and preview themes, including those not installed on your system. So basically, we have a little theme repository going now that you can download straight from your Mythbox and install new themes. And we have some experimental. It's not totally complete because of some issues actually in Broadcom's library, but we do have experimental support for the Broadcom Crystal HD hardware decoder. It's something that's been real popular with like the XDMC folks. You can take something like a real low power system, an Atom system, or an Apple TV. Though I don't necessarily recommend those hardwares, but you can take something like that or an older piece of hardware with a mini PCIe card and install this little Crystal HD card, and it basically will hardware decode all of the Blu-ray codecs. And Jared Wilson, who's another one of our developers and a Red Hat developer, has done a ton of work on that driver. So we're sort of collaborating with Broadcom and improving their API so that we can deliver a better experience in 2.5 for that as well. And I'm sorry,
opened up like the Wi-Fi, like their Wi-Fi drivers are?
It's basically an open library around a closed source binary firmware.
Mm-hmm.
It's more open than your typical Broadcom stuff, but it's not, you know, it's not 100% open source. The firmware is closed source, but that's not totally uncommon. You know, we have a lot of tuner drivers in Linux that are, open source drivers with a binary firmware blob. So it's not totally unheard of. It's not 100% open source code, across the board. And that, I think, is because of their licensing obligations.
And a card like this gives you something. Like for instance, like if I can't use like VDPAU on something, correct? I can do a lot of that decoding, with VDPAU with an NVIDIA card right now. But if I don't have an NVIDIA card, or if I have say like an onboard graphics or something like that that doesn't support it as well, I could throw one of these cards in and then get that hardware decoding in this card then, correct?
That's exactly right. It's very much along the same lines. So for something like a netbook, like a triple E, PC, or something like that, like a little tiny netbook, you can take something like that with a little, single core Atom processor, toss one of these cards in, and have it capable of, a full HD decode.
Wow.
I'm looking through the notes. I notice you have in here a dummy recorder. What's the purpose of the dummy recorder?
Well, there's a couple of purposes. The first is that to date we've had, to date and including 2.4, we've never officially supported having a tuner-free backend, running a totally tunerless system. In some previous versions, it has not exactly complained about it or has not prevented you running without a tuner. But because of some core changes, and it wasn't intentional necessarily, but because of some core changes, that's become truly unsupported in 2.4 because, the backend won't even start. So if you want to run a, quote-unquote tunerless backend, you could set up a dummy recorder. There's basically two elements to that. There's the dummy recorder, which allows you to sort of feed it any MPEG TS file that it'll play on a loop as though it were, as though it were capturing it from an actual hardware card. So you can set up, let's say a VM backend for development. Let's say you want to have a channel of your own programming, and you just want to play something on loop. You can do that with the dummy recorder. And then there's the import recorder as well, which is sort of along the same lines. That was written by Daniel Christiansen, who is one of our developers. And basically it was just sort of a development tool that he uses that will, rather than play something on the loop, it's going to record a fixed file into the system. Think of it as sort of like an, you know, like an import recorder, you know, just sort of, like running the old import script that would add something to your recordings. It works in much the same way, but if you want to actually simulate a recording and use some of the MIST system events, you know, attached to that recording, you can do it with the import recorder.
Interesting.
Does this also allow you to run, say, like an XBMC-like system or Boxy-type system where it's not specifically set up to do any recording, but it can still just, you know, push out all the content, all the pre-recorded content that you happen to have, downloaded content, movies, videos, let's see, music and pictures?
I'm not certain I'm understanding what you're asking me. Can you sort of put it a different way?
Well, would you be able to use this to set up a system where you have no tuners at all? Okay, so it's not just something like a secondary backend or anything like that. This is strictly for, you know, no tuners, you know, and you then set up something similar to like XBMC where, you know, it's just serving up your, you know, content off of your, you know, network or something like that, correct?
Yeah, exactly. So for those people who just want to use, you know, MIT video, MIT music, you know,
right,
the plugins and aren't really interested in the DVR functionality, yes, this is absolutely how they would go about doing that.
Gotcha. And
having VA supported. Cool.
How about MIT NetVision?
You know, we're looking at how about it, just in terms of changes?
Yeah, what's new and exciting? How's the development of that coming along?
Well, Doug Vaughn has written a ton of new sources for MIT NetVision, and I'm going to be, you know, I know that I'm going to miss a couple when I list them off the top of my head, but the big ones that people will care about are Hulu, Comedy Central. He's written a number of these mashup grabbers, you know, like basically sort of mashing up a number of different sources. Like there's a technology grabber, space grabber, a nature grabber, we have a new PBS grabber, TED Talks, the WB, so basically we catalog all the video available on the WB, and there's tons of it, you know, tons of full seasons and full series. BBC iPlayer, that'll be, I think, a popular one for the UK crowd. Basically, we're aggregating all of that content in MIT NetVision now with these new scripts.
So does that use a browser, like a known browser user agent, and just pulls this information from the websites?
Well, more or less, we're all doing it in a terms of service compliant way. For the most part, Doug scripts take all of the publicly available RSS feeds, which, you know, might each give you, you know, 10 items here, 10 items there, and he basically parses all the RSS feeds. Parses that data out into usable information, you know, season and episode numbers, you know, separates it out by title. He basically takes all of that information and turns it into something that is usable and browsable like a video library.
Right.
So everything, you know, there's no
that's pretty cool.
No scraping in violation of terms of service. It's basically just all taking all of the publicly available sources and turning them into something that is greater than the sum of its parts.
Is it easy to add new? Is it? I guess it's set up like a plug-in type, you know, setup where you can add new stuff, you know, pretty easily to this. Correct?
Yeah. Basically, the XML format that sort of I wrote out for the plug-in, you know, I just sort of developed a basic RSS XML format that we use that is sort of the output of all of our grabber script, and I'll say that is very heavily inspired by Boxy's equivalent. You know, I did a lot of reading of how Boxy did their whole content RSS before I started working on the NetVision ones, I guess a year and a half ago. And so in terms of functionality, it offers very, very similar, at least metadata. You know, there are a couple places where I'd like to improve the plugin further. You know, I'd like to be able to offer a full screen, you know, without the borders, so like sort of an unthemed browser view, which is sort of what Boxy does. They overlay their player over it, essentially. They make it seem like it is a native video playback. I'd love to be able to do something like that, and I'd love to be able to do another thing that they do, which is basically there's sort of an interpretive layer that goes between Boxy's control interface, you know, play, stop, rewind, et cetera. And it translates that into JavaScript or coordinates, mouse clicks in that Flash player, which they suppress. So I think it'd be really neat to be able to do that same thing in this, at which point, you know, it just becomes a matter of you know, having the same amount of content to offer. You know, and at this point, right. I think that the big ones that Boxy offers, Hulu, iPlayer, Revision 3, all that stuff, we offer all that stuff. What we need to go on working on is user experience there. You know, how can we make it as natural and sort of integrated as we can.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's a lot of incremental improvements. I've started doing some work to move part of that code into the back end. So, in fact, when you do a search in NetVision now, it actually asks via MythXML the back end to perform that search for it. The back end posts the scripts now as well. So basically, the back end becomes the source, you know, through which all of that information flows to the front end, more so than it was in 23 when, you know, when all the scripts were basically just all natively executed on the front end. Yeah, and let's see, well, what else? Paul Harrison is in the middle of his Myth Music rewrite. He's done a lot of work behind the scenes this last release. You know, some stuff which people will be able to recognize and some which, you know, without knowing all of the changes he made, it's tough to see it on face. But he's definitely still hard at work on the Myth Music rewrite. It wasn't, unfortunately, done for 24, but we're all definitely really hoping that it will be for the next release. And, you know, we're firming up our plans for the next release and our schedule as well. We're sort of going back and forth on, you know, do we start with some of these really ambitious projects that we've got in mind, or, you know, or do we keep one more normal release cycle before we try and deliver on some of this big stuff that we have in mind for you guys?
And what about storage groups? Are you guys you're still expanding storage groups to all the different applications?
We absolutely are, and in fact, I'm glad you mentioned it. One of the other ingenious pieces of work this last release was Chris Pinkham delivering ISO and Video TS playback on storage group. And that's sort of been one of the big missing pieces from its video storage group. You can now play ISO files from your back end. You can now play a Video TS folder from your back end. And in fact, you can now play a Blu-ray BDMV folder straight from your back end. Now, there are no new users of storage groups this release, but we definitely have aims to move almost certainly Myth Gallery to storage groups by our next release. And I'd be shocked if the Myth Music rewrite finished without that content also being on storage groups. So I think you'll see at least those two, I hope, by our next release. No promises, but that's definitely, I think, the direction that we're headed with that stuff.
I can't wait for that to happen because I am like most people, I, you know, multiple, you know, front end systems and whatnot, and I just NFS mount everything around, and I actually found, you know, I had a hardware failure not too long ago, and I shut down my NFS mount between my boxes, and my menuing and all that stuff, like it just seemed to go a whole lot faster once the NFS overhead seemed to be gone. That was just lying there. I don't know how they're interrelated. I don't expect them to be related at all. But, you know, just by shutting that down, I noticed that a significant improvement in my front-end menuing of, say, going back to the recordings, for instance, you know, just became a whole lot faster. So I don't know what seemed to be going on behind the scenes there, but it works. So I'm really looking forward to, you know, the storage groups coming about, especially for the music and the pictures, you know, now that we have all this extra stuff as well with the videos.
Right, and I totally agree with you. There's a couple of things that might have been at play there. See, the problem with NFS in some cases is certain NFS mount options just destroy performance in Myth.
Yeah.
You know, particularly those related to, you know, to last modified time. You know, so if Myth is constantly under the impression that that something has just been modified, it's constantly hitting that NFS mount, and it doesn't have that issue with storage groups. yeah, yeah, it's you know, I just think it's a great system from a usability perspective, you know, as much as anything else. Because adding a front end and having to do no configuration whatsoever besides giving it the database information is to me just a huge advantage over some other distributed types of systems.
Oh yeah, it's outstanding. I mean, it's you know, I mean, on an Ion front end, you know, when I set it up, you know, initially on this last go around that I did, and it you know, installed, what is it, 20 minutes, half hour, it connected right to it. Just a couple things. I don't even think I needed to add in a password. I think it was able to recognize that, and it
right.
just connected right up, no problem. So I just told it the IP address where the server was, and that was it.
Yeah, in a properly configured system, it's going to go out and see the back end via UPnP, and it's going to actually request all of the login information from the back end that way. And basically, it's going to precede all of that configuration and information. You know, there's any number of mitigating factors that might prevent that from working properly in some configurations. But yeah, I mean, it sounds like your system's well configured under those circumstances. Yeah, you start up a new front end, it finds that back end via UPnP, and you are good to go. Some other things that have occurred to me about some big changes that you guys might enjoy and that I think users in general might enjoy. MiFIDEO, so going back a couple of releases, I've been saying that I really need to write a generic metadata class for MiFTV. You know, for those of you who've tried XBMC, something that they do really well is metadata, and it's something that we talked about last time I was speaking with you gentlemen. You know, something that they do really well in a really unified way is metadata for everything, for music, for videos, for, you know, movies, for television. You know, everything is sort of a similar sort of interface. So it's the last couple of releases, I've been trying to figure out exactly how to manage it, and something that I wrote up for this release is a generic metadata class, basically a grabber and image downloader manager, and the first couple of users of that are MiFIDEO and MiFGame, and basically MiFIDEO will now, upon a scan, will now automatically go out and grab all the metadata for anything that's added. So you don't need to go through anymore and individually add anything. You don't need to rely on Jamu for mass metadata grabs. And so basically it'll grab all of that artwork. One of the other little tweaks that I added is in the edit metadata screen, you can optionally have now a online browser of all of that artwork. So if MiFIDEO or any external script grabs a piece of artwork that you are not super fond of, you know, it's not necessarily your favorite, you can now go in to the edit metadata screen in a theme which supports it, like ArcLight, and you can go and you can select from all of the online artwork. So if you don't like that fan art, you go in, you edit your metadata, you say select from online sources, you can see all of the fan art that's available for that item, select the one you want, it'll download it, insert it, and you're all set. So you can basically pick and choose the artwork you like now. It's all grabbed automatically. Same thing with MiFGame. I added metadata, script support, and image support for MiFGame. So you can go look up games, pull in fan art, screenshots, box art for those games now, as well as all the metadata for games.
That is awesome, because I can think of one thing right now where that's actually happening to me. My wife and I, we watched the show Parenthood, and it pulls in the fan art from the movie Parenthood.
Yeah, I noticed the same thing.
Martin.
I watched the same show.
Yeah. Yeah, so it doesn't quite pick the right one. Yep.
Right, and let me tell you how I'm going to solve that one. You know, or how we are going to solve that one. Right now, and I don't know if we've ever spoken about this, but right now the way that recording artwork works is basically you need to use an external script. You have to use Jamu to grab that stuff automatically for you, and Jamu names it basically by, you know, the name of the show. And then when you go into the recording, it basically does a hunt. It basically says, oh, okay, I've got an episode of Parenthood highlighted. I'm going to go looking for any file that starts with Parenthood, ends in _fan art, and recognized extension. And the first one it finds is going to be the one that it displays. You know, the other amusing one that I saw this week is I started recording Conan O'Brien's new show, which is called Conan.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine the artwork that I'm getting.
Conan the Barbarian.
Conan the Barbarian, yep.
Very muscly guy with a sword on my my fan art for Conan. So the way we're going to solve that is basically we're gonna put that metadata grabbing stuff into recording rules. So basically, when you go set up a recording rule, it's going to look up that item for you. It's going to present you with all of the things that it could be, or if it finds just one item, it'll basically prompt you for the artwork that you like, and it's going to associate that artwork with that recording rule. So basically, you will have picked the artwork you like for that show. Every recording that you get is going to have that artwork. It's not going to make any mistakes. There's not going to be any hunting or guessing involved. Basically, it's just going to be the artwork that you like for your shows every single time. Yeah, I think it's got a, you know, and I sort of left it open for music. I'm not sure, you know, I'm not sure what Paul has in mind for his rewrite, but I tried to take into account music in writing the classes as well. They basically just have an empty block of code for handling music. And adding it to a new plugin is really just a matter of, you know, maybe 30 or 40 lines of code. And, you know, basically just writing the logic of how you would handle it for the particular media that you're dealing with. But already it's working fantastic in Myth Video. It's working awesome in Myth Game. And I think it's going to be great for recordings as well.
Well, that's pretty cool. I can't wait. I can't wait to get my hands on all of this new stuff. Finding time to upgrade right now.
Yeah, well, it's the holidays. You know, we wanted to get it out before the holidays as well because, you know, obviously we all have family commitments as well. But, I mean, you know, just there's huge across-the-board improvements. And, of course, as with any release, you know, the first couple of weeks, you know, all we can do is test it as much within our own use cases as we can and release it and ask that people try it. You know, there's always going to be bugs in the first few weeks where, you know, we're knocking bugs down as they come up just as fast as we can. But I would say there are relatively few real severe showstopper bugs. I mean, I'm not aware of any gigantic ones or ones without a workaround. You know, we had talked before the show a little bit about some issues with the HD home run, and so maybe now might be a time to address that. You know, we have a number of little quirky bugs that have sort of, you know, it happens, that we're working through. And one of the ones that you gentlemen mentioned to me was the fact that there's certain configurations of the HD home run that, you know, that can have a failed recording if they have two tuners going at once. And basically, it's possible to work around it. And if anybody is seeing this issue or concerned about the issue, it's our bug number 9247. And last time we spoke, I talked about how the HD home run bugs are directly routed to the Silicon Dust folks. So they've already acknowledged the bug report. They're investigating. You know, one of the great partnerships that we have with those guys is that they provide us with library updates when they need new functionality or have new hardware. They did that this release cycle for us. They sent a update to their library, which we internalized through their whole QA cycle, and it passed. So we updated the HD home run code, and that was basically to add rudimentary support for their cable card tuner. And there's probably another update that we need for some improvements to that support, but the hardware support is actually already there in Myth TV 24. So what happened there is now that we have it out and now that we have a broader audience, we have some people who are basically saying when you're using both tuners at once and when you have manually specified an IP address when setting up that HD home run, when in Myth TV setup, you manually set an IP address, you know, to point at the HD home run rather than using the auto detect, that when you have two simultaneous recordings, the second one will fail. So the workaround for that, and it's a fairly easy workaround, you go back in, you reconfigure the card, and you have it do the auto detect. And there have been a number of reports saying that, hey, you know, the workaround works. But obviously we want to solve, you know, the problem under all circumstances. So bug goes straight to Silicon Dust. They're looking into it, and we expect to have you know, hopefully a fix from them really soon.
Yeah,
is
I mean,
the issue that you've seen, Pat, like when you were doing your research on it?
Well, I was just reading the Myth users mailing list, and that seemed to be one that popped up a few times. Different people mentioned it. And that would be a showstopper right. for me because, you know, the HD Home Run is one of my primary recording devices. And there's some nights where I'm running 2-3 recordings at once and, you know, two at once.
Right. That wouldn't be a problem. All you would really need to do is when you upgraded, you need to go back into Myth TV setup and switch it such that it's, you know, that it basically recreate the capture card using the, you know, the built-in library auto detect. You know, when you set up the card, there's that option for, like, FFFFFFF, you know, the full broadcast mode.
Right.
Where it basically auto-detects it. If you do that, then both tuners are going to work fine.
But I think your issue, Pat, too, is you don't run DHCP at your house, correct?
No, I'm all static.
And the HD Home Run requires that, doesn't it?
For
the auto-detect to work?
I may have a broken understanding of the issue, but the HD Home Run library itself has a auto discovery of their devices, whether it's a static or DHCP IP on the HD Home Run, you can still use the library auto detection.
Oh,
so it
okay.
would not prevent you working it with the static IP on the thing.
I currently don't have one, so I'm just kind of pulling at what I recall hearing about the HD Home Run. But
it's a great device. I absolutely love it, and I do a ton of recordings with it. And
sure.
All my network stuff is off of that, and I would hear my family screaming if recordings failed. It would not be good.
Yeah, I mean, I've
you mentioned. Yeah. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
This is the only issue we're seeing with simultaneous recordings at the moment with it. I'm not aware of any further issues. So, you know, you could incorporate the workaround. Alternately, follow bug 9247. Wait until it's resolved as closed fixed, and then do your upgrade then.
Yeah, I'm in no rush to upgrade. You know, for me, upgrading, it would be to support a new piece of hardware or some you know hot new feature. I'm pretty good right now, but. I'll keep an eye on it, and as soon as I hear, you know, whatever issue is resolved, I'll probably do it.
I'm sorry, Dan, you were
mentioning about the cable card support. Now, I unfortunately wasn't able to make this episode, but we had Jeremy Hammer on a few weeks back about the Seton cards as well, and he was explaining that the whether it's Seton or whether it's the HD Home Run cable card tuner, that they are all going to pretty much use the same types of libraries. I'm sorry, the same libraries. They're basically other network devices that get added to the system. And you said with 24 that you have now, would you say preliminary support or they're supported for what copy once material or how would you classify the state of that right now?
The content which those cards will support on Myth TV is going to be unchanging. The HD Home Run and the Seton card are both going to provide you the same content, you know, at this level of support or, you know, or going down as we improve support for those devices. You know, you're going to get anything that's marked copy-free, basically.
Okay.
And depending on your cable company, that's going to vary wildly. Comcast, from what we understand, Comcast in many regions has sort of a tacit agreement with the TiVo folks to allow their TiVo home sharing software to pass stuff around. So they leave most of the stuff that's not premium, they leave that copy freely. It's still encrypted, which means you need a cable card to decrypt the content. But the content itself
right.
is marked copy freely, which means in those markets, Myth TV with any of the cable card devices is going to allow you to hopefully record just about everything except for things like HBO, Showtime, that kind of stuff. But, you know, things like sci-fi, things like, you know, Discovery, that stuff. In those markets where that is true, that should be the case. Then you have other cable companies like Time Warner, which apparently pretty universally set all their channels to copy none. So in those markets, it's not a real exciting product for Myth TV users.
It's useless in those markets.
So basically, that's the content side of things. In terms of support for the devices, The HD Home Run library that we have in 24 is compatible on a base level with their cable card too. It will work, and one of their founders, in fact, wrote the code that he submitted to us that I was referring to earlier that adds that support. And it's the reason that we made sure to go through that library update this last release cycle. Now, parallel to that, one of our developers, Daniel Christiansen, has branched off Myth TV into a new recorder rewrite branch, which will be present in 25. So what he's working on is simplifying and improving all of our recorder code, and he's been doing a ton of work on that. And part of the work that he's doing is support for OCR tuners, O-C-U-R tuners, which includes the Seton cable card, support for ASI recorders, which are sort of they're a DVD recorder type that is used in head ends and big broadcast environments. Basically, when you're pulling off of the box for a big ugly dish, you know, or for some of the, you know, the commercial feeds of of channels, that would be ASI. And I hesitate to mention it because I haven't gotten very far with it, and I honestly am not 100% sure this will be in our next release. I somewhat think it's going to be pushed back maybe one more release. But I have done some work on getting Windows BDA tuners working. So basically the ability to use all digital tuners supported in Windows on a Windows backend. So I've made some progress on that. You know, I spent a couple of weeks on it and got diverted, you know, a month or so ago to some other stuff. But when that stuff gets on, it will be possible to run a backend on Windows and use any digital tuner that is supported in that environment.
I don't know how I feel about that, having a Windows backend box. I don't know. I'm torn.
Well, you know, my perspective, and it differs, you know, it differs amongst all the Myth TV developers, as I think it probably does amongst all of the Myth TV users. I think that we do ourselves a disservice by being operating system zealots. And that's not to say that I want to live in Windows or even that I want to run a Windows backend. But I do recognize that the pool of talent that we attract and the number of users who are potentially productive increases dramatically if we also support OS X, if we also support Windows, and don't consider them second-class citizens. You know, Mark Kendall, who wrote the OC and rewrote the video output code and sort of co-wrote a bunch of the Blu-ray improvements after I wrote the initial code with me, and is now working on some dynamite stuff for our next release. You know, Mark Kendall is also, I think, of the same mind about Windows and has done some work on Windows improvements. Windows video and audio playback is probably better on the front end than it has ever been. And in fact, just this last week, we have a random guy who I've never heard his name before turning in great patches for Windows. And I'd just be really hard-pressed to turn down those patches, because I think that the positives far outweigh the negatives in supporting as many platforms as we can reasonably support.
Fair enough. I'm not gonna run a Windows backend on my Myth system.
Well, honestly, I mean, to be completely honest with you, outside of, you know, maintaining the code I write, I don't see myself running one either. But it, you know, it was a neat project to start on, and it's one that I think would benefit us in the long run. Yeah, and you know, I think we have even more, you know, great improvements coming down the pipe for our next release for 25. You know, Mark Kendall, who rewrote the OC and the video stuff, has been doing a ton of work out of nowhere on sort of OpenGL UI bling, I'm thrilled to see him work on that stuff. You know. While Myth UI has improved dramatically over the last, you know, three and four releases, you know, one of the things that we're sort of still a little deficient in is sort of GL fancy effects, you know, animations, blurs, you know, just real fast, you know, effects in compositing. And Mark is, you know, every day I wake up, because he's, you know, he's across the world, every day I wake up and there's a half dozen new patches from Mark, and I just click through them and I go, whoa, holy crap. You know, he's just he's an incredibly prolific developer, and just huge parts of what make 2.4 special and interesting are totally courtesy of him.
So what do you see for 2.5? And you mentioned about, you know, do you make this next release another small, you know, point release, I guess, or do you push it out longer and make it a much larger, you know, with some more lofty goals? What are you looking at, or what do you think you're looking at right now for 2.5 and beyond?
Well, I'd rather undersell and overdeliver, yeah. So I'll be cautious about what I promise here. You know, I can tell you some of the things that we're thinking about, and I can tell you what I think will make our next release, and what I think could potentially take us a little longer. Short-term goals, you know, my own personal goals. I'm working on Blu-ray menu support. I think that you're going to see a lot more of the UI bling stuff that Mark is writing. I think that you're going to see some sort of incremental improvements to things like Myth Gallery and Myth Weather, which Gavin Hurlbut is working on. And I think that it's, you know, there's the potential that we might see pass through of HD audio formats. You have a fancy speaker, you know. Some new code was just committed to FFmpeg this week for EAC3, TrueHD, and DTS-HD pass-through. So there's a fairly good, you know, possibility that we'll see that in our next release. Longer-term, larger projects, I think that our primary big project right now is rewriting setup. Whether or not that will be 25 or 26, I want to be realistic about the fact that I don't know. We're trying to work it out because it's a logistical project, you know, as much as it is a code project, and right. Coming up with a good design is important to us. And so we've had a lot of behind-the-scenes discussion about what would make this good, how should it work, how, you know, brainstorming for this kind of project. And you know, we haven't laid out exactly how we're going to manage the project yet, which is what leads me to believe that it could end up being like a 26 project. I want to see it really in our next release. I just don't know that it's realistic.
Right.
And so, you know, we're looking at doing things like, you know, just profound amounts of sanity checking, you know, and that's my mantra for this project. You know, you should not be able to complete setup without your configuration being valid. You know,
right.
That it's a shared philosophy amongst several of us. You know, you shouldn't be able to put in an IP address that doesn't exist or which doesn't allow you to run a remote front end unless you explicitly choose not to. You know, setting up a slave backend should be as simple as saying, if this is a slave backend, that's my master backend, continue. It's all going to be browser-based. Well, it's going to be a setup API, but the interface to that we are going to provide is going to be a browser-based setup. You'll install Myst TV, you'll pull up a web browser and go to localhost/MystTV, you know, localhost:6543/MystTV setup or whatever, and you'll just go through a wizard. You know, we're trying to hide away unnecessary settings and just basically make it user-friendly enough that it is all but impossible to break your configuration. You can get stuck. I mean, to me, it is more accessible to be, you know, accessible to be stuck than it is to be allowed to barrel through your configuration and have done who knows how many wrong things with it. You know, We have a sort of initial wiki brainstorming page on our developers wiki that we're sort of adding to all the time. And if people want to talk about that project, they're welcome to join us on IRC, on Freenode, in the MythTD users channel. And you know, that's something that I think that we definitely want to talk about. It's just, I think, going to be a slightly longer-term project than we can maybe deliver in 4 or 6 months.
You mentioned that it's browser-based. Do you see a lot of like the MythWeb stuff rolling into there?
They're going to be sort of.
Or is it strictly going to be set up?
This will be it's browser-based, but it's served up by the back end itself, which MythWeb is not.
Okay.
You know, MythWeb is a PHP application,
right.
So they're distinct.
Right.
At the moment, but I was sort of careful to not call it a browser-based setup so much as a API upon which we will offer a browser-based setup.
Okay.
And something that's important, you know, to us is to provide basically a setup API so that you could write a MythUI setup against it, so that you could write a browser-based setup against it, so you could write a PHP setup in MythWeb against it, so that you could even write a configuration, you know, user within XBMC or Boxy or anything else. We just want to offer the ability to plug whatever you want into that configuration API.
That sounds really, really interesting. You want to be able to get that out to be anywhere. You basically just want to let anybody do anything with it, and if they want to use this for it, or they want to use that for it. I mean, that's really amazing.
Right. I think it'll be good, and you know, obviously, it will. You know, how effective having that API is going to be dependent entirely on how many people decide to use it. But I think that minimally, we will write our browser-based, you know, consumer of that API. I'm interested in writing a MythUI. Wizard or subset of that configuration API, I'd like to be able to offer a friendly, hey, welcome to MythTV. You know, you're starting us up for the first time. We're going to go through a simple 5-step process. You just sort of handhold somebody through the absolute minimum required, required configuration steps. You know, and so while our browser-based setup might offer all of the whole range of configuration options, my MythUI one, my pretty, you know, ArcLight MythUI configuration one, I might be selling MythTD boxes commercially. And maybe I know that every box is going to have, you know, every single box is going to have a certain type of hardware. It's going to have, you know, they're all going to be using Schedules Direct, et cetera, et cetera. So I can tailor my setup to only offer those options which those users have to configure. So basically just saying, hey, I'm in whatever zip code, and here is my username and password for Schedules Direct, and, you know, here's my lineup, and that's it, you know? So it'll allow one to customize setup for, you know, for a given locale, for a given, you know, piece of hardware, and I think it's going to be pretty dynamite, you know, if it all works out.
Now, that sounds great. I mean, yeah, you definitely want to be able to, you know, make that as easy as possible for people to do it in these, you know, those types of reseller markets and those other areas where, you know, you want to be able to push out a bunch of them to people and stuff like that.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you know, there's a thousand little pieces. You know, I mean, I'm sure that I'll get off the phone with you guys and I will have forgotten, you know, five gigantic, you know, contributions and a million tiny ones. But, you know, some of the other ones that I was hoping I might be able to highlight are, if anybody's ever tried DVD playback in the TV, they know it's a very hit-or-miss affair, or it has been to date. And one of the, you know, what I see as one of the big improvements in 24 is the fact that that Mark has refactored DVD playback pretty much entirely, and kind of single-handedly in a week's work, close just about every DVD ticket that we have, which is pretty astounding given some of those things that have been sitting around for 2 and 3 years. So, you know, if I had one request of people who are listening, it's that they give the internal player a try for everything for a couple of weeks. Now, granted, there's muscle memory, and, you know, for those who are using MPlayer or VLC or Zine for for DVD playback or for video playback, you know, you may have an hour or two of pain figuring out what the key bindings are and remapping your remote. But I think that ultimately, with the improvements to Miss TV, and especially the consistency you gain by using that internal player everywhere, that people will not be disappointed. DVD playback works awesome right now. I dare say that Blu-ray playback in 24 is pretty awesome. Playback of videos is just vastly improved. For those files that, you know, where Miss has never supported their subtitles, they're supported now. It's just really worth a second look for our longtime users who have maybe long since written off the internal player.
That's great. I've been using the internal player pretty much extensively for the last couple of releases, and I run into an issue every now and then. Mostly it's like Disney stuff for my kids or something like that, you know. But even, you know, some pretty banged up discs from Netflix, you know, coming through, they tend to cause some issues sometimes. But otherwise, I mean, my whole library that I have plays, you know, not that I really use them anymore because I ripped everything, but if I want to throw one in somewhere for some reason, you know, they always seem to work. So
yeah, and you know, hopefully you're going to see even more improvement on, you know, when you upgrade to 24. But you know, I mean, I have seen deficiencies in our internal player before, but I mean, 201, they have been addressed in the last couple of releases by Yannick Runau and Mark Kendall, and some work by Daniel Christiansen. I mean, those guys have just been tireless in improving the player. And it's just, you know, if you try it out and you find that it doesn't support something, you know, that you find that, mm-hmm. that something crashes the front end or it just plays like garbage, please, please, please open a ticket. You know, it's sort of the same appeal that I made last time we spoke. You know, if you're ready to write off the internal player again, if there's some content that you use that plays great in M player but doesn't play, you know, quite right in the internal player, please, please open a ticket. Please provide us with a sample. Because there's no way for us to get it, you know, to the point where you feel good about using it if we don't know the problems exist. And you know, to be frank, we're moving towards a time in Myth Video, at least, where the internal player becomes the only option. Where at the most, external player support will sort of boil down to an escape valve. You know, I'm talking about removing support for external players, you know, for file types, and literally having a menu option saying play an alternate player. And really, even that is going to be contingent upon, you know, having some sort of hack to allow external players to, you know, to play content from storage groups. Because, you know, one of my great frustrations as the Myth Video maintainer is having to write every piece of code that opens a video twice, once for you know, once for storage groups and once for local files. And you know, I could probably cut down the Myth Video code by a third if I got to rip out, you know, the rest of internal player support, and I'm sorry, the rest of external player support. And we're rapidly headed towards that time. And so rather than have people be surprised or you know, all suddenly come out at once saying, oh, but it doesn't play this piece of anime, you know, or, you know, this MKV, you know, that I got here, you know, I mean, obviously we really are only interested in legitimate content. But if you are a legitimate owner of a content and you want us to support it, then please provide us with a small sample. We are so happy to make sure that works in the internal player. We are as, you know, we are the big evangelists of the player, and it, you know, it does us no good, and you know, and it discredits our work if we're not working to fix those bugs. It, you know, there's nothing to gain in not fixing your bugs for you.
Well, you guys do awesome work. I'm looking forward to upgrading. And
thanks a lot.
Yeah, me too.
It only gets better with each release.
As always, I just want to emphasize that, you know, even though you guys have been so courteous to have me on twice, that that all this work is, you know, I'm the smallest cog in a big machine, and guys like Mike Dean and Gavin Hurlbut and Chris Tinkham and Chris Peterson and Rob Smith and Isaac Richards and Yana Grunau and Daniel Christiansen, I mean, all, and Mark Kendall and Paul Harrison, And I could just go on and on until I ran out of names or I forgot someone to get yelled at. But, you know, those guys, every one of them works tirelessly to make Myth great. And you know, we may be short-tempered at times on the list, myself especially, but it's all out of sincere desire to see Myth succeed, to see people give it its due, and really to make it the greatest product that we can. And, you know, we are enthusiastic about improving it. You know, there's nobody who is more excited about seeing Myth improve than we are. You know, so just please, if you think, you know, if you think we're not interested in your bug, we are interested in your bug. You know, if you think that we, you know, that we're just going to shut you down, at least give us the opportunity to shut you down and then have a conversation with you about it, you know, and explain why maybe a bug was invalid or why it didn't make sense to us or why we couldn't necessarily fulfill a feature request. You know, don't let it stop with a closed bug, invalid, or feature request, or works for me. You know, engage us and figure out why we think the way we do and maybe change our mind. You know, we definitely welcome that.
Robert, keep awesome. Up the great work. Pass, you know, our thanks to the rest of the devs.
Thanks, you guys. Likewise, thank you so much for having me on.
We'll have to talk again.
Can I open up one thing here real quick?
Yes, sure, Dan.
Has there been any thought or consideration to, you know, something like alternative front ends at this point now with things like, you know, with Android being pretty prolific and tablet device? I know we were talking a little bit beforehand about some of the tablet devices that are out there, but is something like that, you know, potentially possible in the future with the improvements that they're making in those mobile OSs?
Well, I can address
as a front end.
I can address it on a couple of levels. The first one is, I will say, and I'm not certain how much of this I should disclose, but I will say that we have at least three or four developers interested in a major new entrant to the light set-top box market. You know, to the third-party set-top box market, one which might have an app marketplace opening in the next year.
Right.
I'll say no more than
right.
that. certainly interest there.
Oh, believe me, I've been thinking that too. So.
You know, I think that given, I think that given adequate access to the hardware and given the ability to run the libraries that Myth. That Myth is built upon, you know, Qt and, you know, having decent GL support and stuff like that. I mean, if those are met, I think that we're all pretty enthusiastic about that. In fact, the guy who does most of our, you know, liaising with FFmpeg, Yana Gruno, and who also does our sort of imports of that code, he's like a big BeagleBoard person and is very interested in getting working on ARM and stuff like that. Mark Kendall has, meanwhile, in this last couple of weeks, done a lot of work that will lead to us having OpenGL ES support, which is sort of the embedded subset of OpenGL, which is used on things like the BeagleBoard and, you know, other light, you know, tablet-type devices and you know, sort of Pico PC. With all of those things, you know, all of those requirements met, I think you will see Myth on embedded systems. I think you will see Myth on some of these new third-party consumer set-top boxes. I think that given adequate access to the hardware, you'll see it on anything we can get it running on. You know, we have we have users out running Myth on you know, on a lot of Ion processors, Atom processors. But I think that ARM is certainly a possibility in the future. You know, so long as the graphics DSP, you know, the DL performance and the decoder DSPs are available to us, and they're starting to be. I think there's a future there. I just don't know. I don't know where specifically it lies.
Right. Because I really hit a wall with some of it. I actually started writing an Android-based application that allows you to stream the content. You know, from the Myth backend, and it works really, really well if you're running Android 2.2 and you can have Flash and you know, available to you. It also worked really well if I tried to go, you know, adding in some third, you know, some third party, you know, utilities, like using like a Darwin streaming server, and but it really required you to transcode everything, you know, before you intended to watch it, and I wanted to get away from a lot of that type of hassle and stuff like that, but you know, I there are some limitations that I'm finding, like for instance, like if you secure your, you know, MythWeb, you know, you can't get access to it because there's something broken inside the Android code base right now related to digest authentication. So I can't actually authenticate to the back, and it just continually tries to send it, but it never tries to, it never actually resolves anything, or it never actually gets like a 200 back saying, hey, this is now good with your credentials established. So I mean, I've been messing around with different things, you know, one being able to do it, you know, Wi-Fi or 3G wherever you're at, or the other one whether or not you're going to do it internally. Now the Android platform is limited in the types of codecs that it can play. So right now, if you don't transcode down something from the regular broadcast recordings from MPEG-2, you know, codec, you're not going to be able to watch it, you know. Yeah, so but it always
real quick. I'm sorry. I totally see where you're heading, and I don't mean to cut you off. But what I think will be really interesting for your particular use case, and again, you know, this would have been one of those things where I should have told those guys about that. Chris Pinkham, yeah. one of our big core developers and one of the members of our steering committee, has been working for some time on a sort of a multi-file, you know, basically a one-to-many mapping between a recording and your, you know, a program that you have recorded and the media that goes with it. And there's a couple of things that into that, you know, the ability to map fan art, screenshot, et cetera, to it. But also, part of what he's written that is not committed yet, part of what he's written is the ability to also simultaneously record, transcode to multiple files of the same, you know, multiple different profiles, basically, of the same recording. So basically, we are headed towards a time where you can set up a profile, let's say, saying, hey, also have a file ready for Android, such that on the way into the system, you are also recording to to an Android-compatible format. What exactly that's going to look like, you know, to the user, I'm not 100% certain yet, but your use case is like, exactly what it's written for, because Chris wants to be able to watch it.
Yes, that's exactly what I'm looking for.
On different front ends with different power, he also wants to be able to watch it on his iPod. And so watching on his iPod means it's got to be an MP4 container, it's got to be H.264 within a certain profile. You know, so Chris is literally doing what is going to probably enable what you're looking for.
Well, I'm really looking forward to that then, because that's exactly what I'm looking for. I don't want to have any intermediate steps, or I don't want to do Flash. You know, I'm thinking maybe WebM would be a good solution at some point coming up here, because Android's going to support it with the next release. So I'm really hoping to find some solution for this problem, as well as fix whatever seems to be broken with the digest stuff, so that you could secure your MythWeb if you want to. But yeah, so that's really what I'm looking for, and that will be great when that does get implemented.
Yeah, I mean, that's a two-step process. Basically, the first step is we're doing a major database overhaul regarding video files of all kinds, recordings and Myth Video, and we're unifying those files in the database, basically on one common table structure that a video and a recording will be sort of equal citizens, you know, or equal partners within this structure. And that database format is actually what allows us to have that one-to-many mapping. And then Chris's plan after that is to merge in his code, which I guess he's had written for some time. But it has to, you know, it has to be a second step to that database change. And I know that for sure that database cutover is going to occur before our next release, and with any luck, the multi-file support will be in there as well.
Well, that will be great. I am really looking forward to that.
Excellent.
Awesome stuff.
Excellent, excellent. Any other questions, comments, concerns?
I think you got it covered this time, Robert. Excellent. Thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of great stuff. A lot of great stuff, and I'm really looking forward to upgrading.
Really, you know, I really do, you know, speaking for myself, and I know for everyone else, definitely appreciate your guys' enthusiasm. You know, there's a big community around Myth. There's not a whole lot of people out there who would regularly get together and record a podcast. So, you know, it's very appreciated. Thank you for the evangelizing you do, and you know, and thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thanks for being on.
All right, you guys, be in touch.
Take care.
We will.
You guys. All right, happy holidays.
Take care.
You too. That was Robert McNamara. He's the Myth video maintainer for the Myth TV project, and we were really glad to have him on to talk about this this release.
Yep, exciting stuff. Can't wait to get it going.
I'm going to have to call out the HTPC-centric guys.
Uh-oh, here we go.
Because
here we go.
Oh, I listen to their podcast because I want to get the other side's perspective on things, and I was really, really, you know, kind of, you know, annoyed to hear how they regard, you know, Myth TV and Linux and whatnot as a media center option. And it's just kind of absurd. So, you know, I mean, they brag about their Sage TV and their media center, and yet they can't seem to stick onto one platform. Without having issues. I think their last guest that they had on the other day said that he was afraid to leave his wife alone with the Sage TV. I guess it was a Sage TV that he was using, or I forget if it was Sage TV or if it was a Media Center. I couldn't remember because he flip-flopped back and forth. But still, my Myth TVs run. They run constantly. I rebooted mine today because it needed some type of a kernel update, and that was it. I don't remember the last time that I rebooted the thing. It had to have been a couple of months. It's been sitting there running.
My back end has been running for months. Yeah. It's been running.
Exactly. Yeah, I had an update the other day. It was a security update, so I said, "All right, I'll update it." And it needed to be rebooted. I said, "Okay, I'll reboot it." The thing reboots, comes right back up, starts recording again, does what it needs to do. You know, no issues. So I really want to call these guys out and say, you know, what is the deal with disregarding you know Myth TV and Linux users as, you know, five people who sit in their basement. You know, I think that was some type of a quote that they said. We don't regard Myth TV because there's five people who sit in their basement doing it.
we all live in our parents' basements, you know.
My ass, yeah.
And I'm a virgin too, so. And I'm 40 years old,
right,
so.
Right. Yep.
It's funny stuff.
So you guys can have all the problems you want with your media centers and your Myth TVs, and you only can extend it on an Xbox 360, and, you know, I don't even know what the hell Sage TV is doing nowadays. I haven't looked at that project in quite some time, and quite frankly, for what they are paying for, you know, I don't see where they're getting anything more or extra out of it than what I get, you know, from this great community of people who strive, like Robert said, strive to make it the best that it can be. So I don't know. Prove me wrong. Come. You know, let's talk about it. Let's square up Sage TV and Myth TV and Media Center and whatever. And I want to know what it is that you got to do to keep your thing running. Considering mine just sits there and runs, you know, and it does what it does. So
sounds like a challenge, Dan.
Bring it on. I know. That's what I'm saying. Bring it on. Prove me wrong. Tell me that I'm doing something wrong with Myth TV that it runs and I don't have to do anything special to it. Hell, I had a babysitter come over one time, watch my kids. She picked it up, no problem. She's 13 years old. She picked it up. You know, we came home. She was watching a movie. She was having a good old time with it. She helped the girls watch some shows, you know, and stuff like that while she was here. She never seen it before in her life, and she was able to pick it up with no problem. So
my 7-year-old son uses it.
Prove me wrong. That's all I got
to
say.
He seems to get by fine.
Yeah. So, prove me wrong. That's all I got to say. Yeah.
It's good to rant sometimes, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Hey, and it's not about RCN. There we go.
Yeah. You need to get a TiVo from RCN. That's your problem.
Yeah, that's what I got to do. Go get a TiVo.
Yep. Well, we're going to wrap it up. We were a little long today, but hey, you get some extra content because we've been lackadaisical.
Right.
So, excellent conversation with Robert. All the good stuff in 024.
Yes, like, I... I can't wait to see what they keep doing. I mean, it's just been absolutely great. So, and I'm really looking forward. I'm actually doing some new hardware upgrades, getting an SSD drive and potentially a Blu-ray drive for the main.
I might have to get a Blu-ray play, man. Now that the stuff is supported.
Yeah.
They come down in price.
I found an Asus one on Newegg. Now it's like $79. It does Blu-ray playback, but it can burn any CD format you can think of. So, I mean, it's not bad. I think it's on sale right now for like $79.
I might have to get one for Black Friday sales, you know, online Black Friday sales.
Yeah.
Like Tiger Direct or Newegg.
I'm going to put an SSD in there to speed that thing up and put the Blu-ray drive in there, and then I'm going to do the upgrade.
I might have to. Blu-ray.
That's what I've been kind of holding out for.
That might have to be the thing to do, a Blu-ray player. Especially now that the encrypted stuff is pretty, mostly supported now.
Oh, I know. It's awesome. Do that without downloading all your codec packs, Sage TV, and Media Center.
You got to defrag your drive. That's the problem.
Yeah. And don't forget that virus scanner.
And if you're running at the front end, you got to re-encode, don't you? Different format? Something like that.
I guess. I thought it was all Xbox 360s.
I would welcome a conversation with any of those guys. No problem. We could talk about features.
I would too.
And do a head-to-head comparison. Yep. I would love to talk about file systems and performance, codecs.
Anything.
DRM.
Yeah. This guy some tweets, by the way, and he never responded.
Which one?
The guy from the guest that they had on their last show. I forget what his name is now.
I don't know.
But he never responded to me. So.
Yeah. It's all good. It's all water under the bridge, Dan. So we're going to wrap it up, folks. Thanks for listening. We'll get back to you as soon as we can. Take care.
See you later, everyone.